go. Hi, everybody. And hi, everybody at home, and hi, everybody in the room. As you know, we like to have a small audience in the room so that we can ask questions and get interaction, and much bigger audience at home. So welcome to what I think is probably one of the most important sessions we've ever done. You might say to yourself, you know, surely you've done this to death. But in actual fact, we could say it another way. And we could say, this is a fundamental skill. Mastering stress is so important that we would teach it more than once, and we would teach it probably every time. Of course, we could ask the question. And of course, what we'll find is that most people are going to say that they're more stressed than ever, because they're busier than ever, or whatever that, you know, whatever the whole thing is. So let me ask you a quick question, both at home and to those of you in the room. How many of you are busier now than you were 5 years ago? Hands up for that. Okie doke. Now, that 5 years ago we're talking about, were you busier then than the 5 years before that? Uh-huh. So what we can safely say is the pace of modern life is accelerating. And you might have heard me say, is it possible for you to walk down the street doing your banking, checking your mail, and getting your groceries ordered? Uh-huh. How long did it take your mum to do those things? A week. Because to get the mail, she'd have to physically go line up all that sort of stuff. To do the banking, she would... What would your mum have to do the banking? This is one generation. Have to be there before 3 o'clock in the afternoon and line up and wait her turn, fill in forms, all those kind of things. Yeah, couldn't go before 10 o'clock in the morning. How many of you remember the bank was only open till midday on Saturday? Uh-huh. And along with the post office and a few other places like that. I've got a client that I'm working with at the moment whose major problem is her inability to go outside the front door of her house because she doesn't have to. She doesn't have to because Will Woolies send the groceries. So basically, she doesn't have to go outside. I'm just not talking about Woolies. I'm talking about everything that you need to be able to stay inside the house. She stays inside the house because, what do you reckon she says to me? If I say to her, why won't you go outside? What do you reckon she says? She admits that she's worked it out so that she doesn't need to. So she knows that she's got a problem. But can any of you take a stab at why she says the problem, what the problem is? Because she doesn't say, I can't go out the house because there's a problem here. She says she blames something else. Stress outside is related to what? What's outside of every house? People. And I go, say that to me again. She says, people are idiots. And this broad generalisation, which you've probably heard more than once, probably heard it before I said it, she said, people are idiots, they're all mad, they're all crazy. Have any of you been in the mall and nearly bumped into someone who was walking in front of you while they were looking somewhere else? Uh-huh. So that stresses her. And so she says, people are idiots, they smash into you. For her, that's a big issue. For other people, it could be a game. So when we look at stress, then we kind of got to look at it from the point of view of what do we do with it? How do we turn it into what it is? So have a look at this. Richard Carlson says, stress is actually nothing more than a socially acceptable form of mental illness. If we were able to admit that this is a mental illness, we could get on with a mental cure. Does that make sense? As soon as you admitted that you needed help with something, you could get on with what the help is. What most of us do, though, is if we say, I've got a mental illness, what's the implication? If you just said the words, I've got a mental illness, what would you be afraid of people saying, or what conclusion would people come to if you said you've got that there's something wrong with you, there's a screw loose, and
you're dangerous to other people.
Not only are you dangerous, but you should just fix it. You should just get over that. You should just not be like that. Interestingly, this is a kind of a prescription that our culture gives us for pretty much anything that you can't see. So if you can't see it, just get over it. So if you're scared of speaking in public, well, just get over it. Now, if it's a snake, well, kill it. In other words, make the stress or the fear or the tension go away. Do whatever you have to do to make it go away. But if it's something that you can't see, well, just change your mind. The problem is, it's very difficult for us to change our mind if we don't know how to. In other words, really what we're going to talk about here is the importance of mental health and how we need to keep our brains in good working order. Is it possible that your brain could use a service every now and then like your car does? Okay, so if we look at that, we say, what's the sign of your car needing a service? Then you're going to come up with things like, you know, the steering's a bit loose, or it sounds a bit rattly in the motor, or it's just been a bit wild, or it doesn't, you know, doesn't hold the road as well as it did, or whatever the signs of the car deteriorating are. As our performance deteriorates, in other words, if the tyres in your car wear out, then it gets a little bit more difficult to get it around corners, those kind of things. Maybe it handles a bit sloppier than you used to. If that happens gradually, by the way, if your brakes go off gradually, you don't really notice until you drive someone else's car and put your foot on the brake with normal pressure and through the windscreen. How come? Because of the change. We didn't notice. In other words, if change is gradual, the chances are we won't notice, and then we end up in disastrous circumstances wondering how we got there. So what we're going to address in this session is how to keep your mental health in peak physical condition. It requires as much effort as your body does. What most of us don't get is that the effort that we need to put into our mental faculties is roughly equivalent to the effort that we need to put into our bodies. You could say roughly equal also to the effort you need to put into your emotions. So physical, mental and emotional are components of well-being. Any one of them out of whack and well-being is nearly impossible. So really what we're doing is we're just looking at one aspect of well-being. We can talk, if we were to do a different session, we'd be talking about how to stay physically fit and capable and what kind of diet works well and what kind of exercise program and what is the process of how your body handles food and digestion and all those sort of things. But of course, we're not doing that today. We're looking at the same thing, but we're looking at the mental health side of it. And stress is a sign that we're struggling to cope. Just like your car not going around the corners well is a sign of it struggling to cope and it just needs refreshment. In other words, you can fix a car pretty easy. A set of new tyres, fix the brakes, have a look at the motor, do whatever needs to be done. And we kind of look at that and we go, oh, I just kind of have to do it. Interesting enough, some of these changes on your car have to be mandated. So there are rules about how much tread on your tyres. So the authorities can measure whether you should have your tyres changed or not, because some people would drive until the tyres blew up. As soon as it becomes mandated and there's a penalty for it, we kind of get on with it. We get much more compliance. Really, what I'm saying to you is, what is the penalty that we suffer from lack of paying attention to our mental health? Any guesses? What's the penalty? Because it's not out there. There's not an authority imposing a fine system. But what's the penalty? What's the penalty for your mental health going off by 10%? By the way, 10%, is that a lot or a little bit? Let's say it's easy. Could you be off by 10%?
Yeah.
Easily. Based on what? Well, you ate the wrong stuff. You didn't get enough sleep. You had an argument with someone that matters to you. Something happened to your kids. Something happened in your business. You could be off by 10% easily. If your car's off by 10%, it's virtually unrecognizable. So you, off by 10%, can be like that. Could that 10% happen cumulatively 3 bad days in a row? So you could be off 30% and basically unrecognizable. Fortunately, the fix is a lot simpler than a set of new tyres. That might sound us about face. Lots of people say, hang on, but the mental stuff is hard and changing the tyres on the car is easy, it's just expensive. But the reality is the mental stuff's hard because we're out of practice. It's not actually hard. So we're going to have a look at some pretty interesting stuff as we go through today about how to maximize the benefit. To do that, first of all, we have to know what stress is. And basically, we can encapsulate it by saying it's this sense that you're not able to cope, that what the situation requires is more than what you've got. Does that make sense to you guys? It's kind of like, okay, so here's the situation, but I don't think I've got what it takes to get over it, to manage it, to handle it, to do better with it, to bring it about, bring around resolution or whatever it is. And therefore, we feel like the things that are out of whack, the things that are lacking are time or resources or knowledge or skills, or in fact, all of those put together to handle whatever's landed on our plate. So far, so good? Okay, how often do we have this feeling?
Every day.
Every day. So we have our plans for these transmissions, you know, this kind of live streaming thing that we do. There's a bit for us to get ready on the day because we've actually got to get the cameras up and running, all of those of you at home, and the light, the transmission happening, all that stuff got to happen on the day. We can't actually do it yesterday. We need it today. So there's a bit of pressure on one before we start live streaming. And here in the marina at 4 o'clock this morning, a water pipe, the main water pipe burst, and there's no water anywhere. So me and Jules and Rob, we've got to go off and have a shower over at the gym. So what that does compresses our time because instead of just stuck an end to the ensuite, now it's, you know, do something with my hair. With my hair stands straight up. So when I've been asleep, so do something with my hair, which is spit, right? To get to the car, wrapped in a towel, to get to the gym, hoping that there's no one else in the gym, especially no one else in the shower at the gym, get there, blah, blah, get back, all of that. Aren't we lucky we've got a gym around the corner? The drive is only like a few minutes. We get there, realise we brought the wrong key to the gym, brought the key to the marina, not the key to the gym, drive back, get the right key, go back. How come we got the wrong key? The pressure to get something done quickly meant we just grabbed the wrong key because the two keys hang on the same lanyard type of thing, blue stripy thing, grab the blue stripy thing, off we go. Does that make sense? Pressure makes you make poor decisions and off we go, blah, blah, blah. Fortunately, we can do that. We have the shower, we get back, but it costs us 45 minutes when it would have normally been 7. So what happens to the rest of the morning? Well, there's a lot of pressure now because the other things that got to be done have got to be done in less time. So how often can this happen? Well, water mains only burst every so often. The psychologists tell us that you, as a human being going through life, an adult human being, by the way, very important we make that distinction. As an adult human being going through life, you will experience 4 major stressful events in a year. Now, by major stressful events, we don't mean like you got a flat tire. We mean like you wrote the car off. You ended up in hospital. You got sacked from your job or your business went broke or your child ended up in hospital or missing or some major thing. In other words, what they talk about is life-altering. In my industry, life-altering is used in a different kind of a way. It's meant as a positive thing, but the psychologists talk about these 4 stressful events per year for your average person. So here's the interesting thing. Do you reckon God or the universe plans them out for you and spaces them 3 months apart? No. How does God or the universe organize these 4 major stressful events? These are the things beyond the normal pace of life. In other words, your mum, to do the banking, the groceries and the post and all the rest of it, took her all week to do that. You can do that while you're walking down the street. The problem with that, by the way, is you're busy doing stuff that is not satisfying. It's not life enriching. It's very convenient, but it's not the kind of thing that makes you get to the end of the day and say, geez, I had a great day paying bills today. Oh, I really enjoyed getting the groceries today. Not that many people really look forward to going to Woolies or Coles or doing it online. So what happens, we get very busy doing a lot of things that are not necessarily life-affirming, make your heart sing kind of things. So we're flat biscuit doing things that are not fun. At least your mum spread it out over a week. So she could talk to somebody in the queue at the bank. She could talk to a friend in the post office. She probably knew the person in the post office who was serving her. Certainly, there's a good chance your mum knew the teller, the bank teller. And so a lot of the life-affirming processes that we miss now were present in that experience that your mum had. Meanwhile, we're going through life at 1,000 miles an hour, doing the banking, the groceries, all that sort of stuff, getting nothing out of it. You understand what I mean by getting nothing out of it? Sure, we get results. We get the groceries delivered, we get the mail done, we get the banking. That's just fantastic. But getting nothing out of it at the heartwarming level. Meanwhile, there are these four big events lined up. And of course, like I said, they're not spread 3 months apart. There's two of them sneaking around the corner right now waiting for you. What's today? Saturday? Monday or Tuesday? Two of them are going to turn up, one after the other, and bingo, away you go. So we can experience massive amounts of stress just in a normal day, and then one of the four big ones turns up, and just as we think we can't cope, the second one turns up, and if you're out of luck, the third one turns up the week after that, and away we go. We've got to handle that. So far, so good? Rightio. So I started talking about mental health. What I'm talking about is your capacity to cope with that. Look at it at the physical level and compare it. If the flu's going around, your chances of catching the flu are directly proportional to how good your diet and exercise program is. Now, sure, you can go and get the injection. What's that? The vaccine? That kind of thing, and that might help. But essentially, 90% of your resistance to whatever is traveling around in the terms of diseases or flus or whatever has to do with your diet and exercise program and how well you're maintaining the body or the thing that could be invaded by the virus or the bacteria. We're talking about the same thing mentally as far as stress is concerned. The reality is that what happens is that we feel like we're out of control. So the worst form of stress is the kind of stress which says, I can't cope, this is beyond my capacity, there are things going on that I can't affect, that I can't change, and therefore it's beyond my control to be able to make it happen. For most people, feeling like they are out of control or the situation is beyond their control makes them feel like a passenger, and if we feel like a passenger, then it's anything could happen. And from that point of view, all you've got to do is look at, you know, there's me and Rob on a plane last night to come up here. We hit a bit of turbulence. And what kind of emotion ripples through the plane, do you reckon? Whoa! How come? Well, because we don't have our hands on the controls. When I'm flying my ultralight and I hit a bit of turbulence, that's cool. I've got a hold of it. And so our sense of control is the thing that actually causes stress or less stress or not ever. The reality is we don't have a lot of things under control that we think that we do. So a lot of things that cause stress to us are things which we have no control over anyway. So it's interesting to look at this from the concept of where stress gets induced, because essentially 80% of people put 80% of their effort into trying to control things that can't be controlled. You know, what the school teacher's going to say to your kids, what's going to happen in the traffic, who's going to drive like an idiot. Therefore, the truth is that effort to try and control things that are outside of our control, that's what causes most of our stress. In other words, our wish or our hope or our desire for things to be not like they are. It's a fascinating concept. One of the most troubling concepts for human beings is the idea that this is not how I want it to be, so it should change. Rather than realize, hang on, that's how it is, and we could change our response to it. In fact, we could choose a response instead of having a reaction. Most stress is reactive. In other words, we react badly or we respond badly to a stimulus when it turns up. The funny thing about stress is when you look at what relaxes one person, we use relax to describe the opposite of stress. May not necessarily be the best way to define it, but we'll go that way. So what relaxes one person could stress another. So we got anybody in the room who goes fishing? John, you're close to it. You go kayaking? You gave up fishing, yeah. Yeah, much better just going kayaking. It's an interesting concept. When you change the expectation, you change the result. I heard a beautiful statement the other day on a podcast I was listening to. Expectations are your current expectations are your future resentments. Is that beautiful? Is that, you know, we've got a classic coming up. We in our family we have a like an old tradition where back in the days when we had no money, we would go to my mum and dad's house for Christmas. That was at a place called Fingal Bay, and it's a horseshoe-shaped beach, which means that you could find whatever size waves you wanted, because if you went to one end of the horseshoe, there was virtually no waves, and when the kids were little, that was great. And there was a creek that ran into that beach, and we would dam up the creek and all those sort of things. So there was endless amounts of fun, perfect waves, because you just moved where you were on the beach, etc. And so our children have very fond memories of holidays at Fingal Bay, because my mum and dad used to fund the whole thing, and they'd get lots of stone fruit for Christmas, you know, trays of mangoes and trays of peaches and all those sort of things, take them to the beach, have lots of fun, you know, also lots of sweat and sunburn and sand and all that sort of stuff, but overwhelmingly fun. And so now we just booked a holiday there this Christmas, so for the week just before Christmas, we're going there. We've rented an Airbnb place, and we're taking our granddaughter. And both of our daughters are overexcited about taking our granddaughter to the famous beach where they had so many great experiences as children. So we've got 6 or 7 days on the beach. What would your expectations be? It's going to be perfect. The rain will stay away. The sun will come out, but not be too tough. The waves will be the right size. The three-year-old is going to love the beach. Yeah. that we're going to be able to entertain her, that she actually likes salt water or swimming or any of those kind of things. In other words, this could be the greatest disaster we ever set ourselves up for. But what are we expecting? Paradise, perfect. Like, Christmas will be dull in comparison to our expectations for this holiday on the beach, where we're going to do these things that are nonsensical but kind of fun. So if it rains, or if the weather's bad, or if we get some ugly next door neighbours, or if we get on the beach and there's some people making noise, you know, some dude decides they want to run their jet ski right beside us, all that kind of stuff, there's any number of ways that this holiday could go wrong. But if you look at it from here on in, the reason it could go wrong and it could upset us is we've got expectations for it. What we should do is just go, well, look, we'll go spend that 7 days there, we'll see what happens. Might be good, might be bad, could be really tough, could be fantastic, could be all sorts of things. In fact, we don't know. We won't know until we're there, and the chances are that we could spend a lot of the time that we're there not actually being there. Can any of you tell me what I mean by we could be there, but we're not there? We could be on the beach and I could be thinking what's going on in the business. I could be thinking what's going on at home. My mum, who's 91, is very frail. Is she okay? In fact, my mum rang the other day. That's unusual. So I automatically expected that she was in the hospital or that something had gone wrong. In fact, I had two thoughts. The first was, she's ringing to say that something's wrong. She's broken the other leg. She broke one, so she could break the other. And then I thought, hang on, she doesn't ring that often because she doesn't know how to work the phone. It must be my sister ringing. It must be probably good news. So the whole concept of interpreting what's going on turns out to be our experience. So there I'm driving along in the car. I see my mum's number come up on the phone. I have a panic. And then I have a kind of a relief based on what I was thinking because that number came up on the phone. That's how fine it gets. So we go to the beach just before Christmas. I get the wrong breakfast, mate. It's going to be a shitty day. Only if I'm stupid enough to let it be. And that's the reality. We have to look at that and kind of go, you know, it's really, if you look at the examples we've already talked about this morning, I lost 45 minutes in... Or I had an adventure having a shower in a different place. That's chosen by... I was talking to my sister who rang on behalf of my mum. She said, what are you doing? I said, I'm about to get on a plane to fly to Gold Coast to do a day's teaching and then fly back the same day. So I'll be back on a plane 5 o'clock this afternoon to fly back. And she said, oh, that's awful. I thought, you're kidding. This is a privilege. I get to be where I want to be, and then I get to go where I want to go to, do what I love to do, and then go home and be where I want to be. And she's going, oh, that's awful. Automatic assumption of how something would be rather than choosing how it be. So if we understand that John can change his experience of fishing by not fishing, we can just go for the kayaking instead of that have to catch fish kind of a thing, then what you'll see is that stress is 100% self-induced. The reality is there are not stressful events out there. There are situations that we turn into that. We create it that way. So here's a classic example for you from my last week of living with my granddaughter, who I'm, you know, sometimes I'm wondering, am I the luckiest bloke on earth because my wife has trained the three-year-old to wake granddad up by kissing him on the face. So I lie there pretending that I'm asleep, and I hear the little feet come running down the corridor, and she sneaks in being quiet, kisses me on the face to wake me up, and away we go. But from a few days before that, get a phone call from our daughter Emma, this is the mother of the three-year-old, saying, I'm all right. And when you get a phone call that says, I'm all right, as the first thing, but she's actually saying, I'm all right because she's wanting to prevent me from. But anyway, she's written off the car with the three-year-old in it because she's driven in the side of a water truck because she wasn't watching, because as she went around a corner, the three-year-old's dropped the strawberries on the floor and screamed. Now, a three-year-old is going to scream about the dropped strawberries like an atomic bomb went off. Make sense? So that gets a mother's attention. She drives into the side of the truck, writes off the car. Good or bad? She says, I'm okay, and so is Alexis, and so is Julie, who was not in the car but nearby. So everything's all right. Is it good or is it bad? Well, as it turns out, they hate that car. And it's written off. And insured for more than it's worth. So Saturday morning, she gets to go out, have an adventure, prank the car, get a new car. Suits them better. They'll be, because they're buying differently, different finance arrangement, they'll actually be able to borrow more on the mortgage.